Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Very interesting surgeon, comedian, and world traveler, Bassem Youssef, will join us. Also, we'll do the news with him as well. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. So many working remotely in 2020. Increase in data breaches, network infiltrations, bulk data theft and sale, identity theft, and ransomware outbreaks as well. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our information at risk on the internet. You could miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they will send you an alert. So protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats that you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
And now, a tip from the 1965 issue of Good Housekeeping. 120 ways to please a man.
When you're planning to buy a new appliance, make a point of talking it over. Not only is it his money and his house, but he may have some excellent suggestions to make.
Just one of 120 ways to please a man. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
His money and his house.
You heard it.
You better discuss it with him. Bassem Youssef is on again. He's a comedian. He's a writer. He's a producer. He's a doctor. He's a surgeon. He's a media critic and a TV host and has a children's book out, The Magical Reality of Nadia. We've been kind of on a little bit of a theme of children's books today, so this is good timing. It's available now on Amazon. Good to see you again.
Nice to be back. I love this podcast. But now we have to do it remotely. Everything is remote. Are you guys Zoom fatigued yet?
Yeah.
Getting there.
Yeah. I haven't really changed up my schedule too much. I come in every day and I've been traveling and I basically have done everything that you're not supposed to do in COVID times. So it hasn't really affected me, but I am affected by my kids. You know, it's like they're 14-year-old twins. They haven't been in school in a year. They're just kind of sleeping in and the room's dark and they're playing too many video games. There's a kind of malaise that happens when you just say kind of do what you want. And it's kind of hard to police them because I'm gone most of the day. And it's just it's taking its toll on the boy, really. My daughter's social and doing a lot more stuff, but the boy's really been hit by this thing.
Yeah, so I have like Nadia. She's almost nine. She's going to be nine next month, right? So for 2 months, I was out of America. I was in Dubai. And I'll tell you what's going on in Dubai right now. Totally different planet when we're really talking about pandemic. So I was traveling and I was talking to Nadia and I said, listen, you know what? You know, mommy needs all the help that she can get. You're going to be my little helper. Can you please, you know, be nice. Don't put like too much burden on your mommy. You know, like she's because, you know, there's a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of like gets it like, what about my stress? What about my problems? And I said, what, Nadia, you're 8. What could be possibly the kind of stress you're going under? So she stands up and puts like both of her hands in her waist, like, you have no idea what does it mean to be in quarantine when you're being a child. I said, like, oh my God. she has to be, because everything is remote for her too. So I was like, all right, yeah, we have to acknowledge your kind of stress, your kind of pressure too.
I find that by the time you tell your kid, would you be nice to your mom? It's too late. There's already a rich history of them being super shitty to their mom. And, so let's talk about Dubai. You're in Dubai for 2 months.
Yeah. I was finishing like a show there about plant-based diet and I got like kind of like extended. And the thing is like you're in Dubai and it's 2019. Like, I mean, 2020 never happened. I mean, it did happen. They had like a lockdown or whatever, but they opened up everything again. And I think because Dubai is one of the most effective countries when it comes to vaccination and testing. And so it's kind of like they had this kind of like, you know, feeling of safety. Everybody is getting tested in you know, in the airport. But, you know, they had like a surge of cases. But it's like, it's fine. You know, people will be living it. We're gonna give people vaccines and hopefully it will be fine. And apparently it's working for them, I guess.
Well, let's talk about you're a surgeon or trained as a surgeon. I don't know, when's the last time you performed surgery that didn't involve a zit?
That would be exactly 9 years before that, because the first year of me doing the show, I was still a doctor, and it was a little bit weird because as a heart surgeon, being in the morning rounds and people starting recognizing me from the YouTube, it's like, oh my God, aren't you the guy with the funny videos? It's like, yes, it's me. It's like, is he going to operate on me? And it was a kind of a little bit embarrassing. So, well, I stopped.
Seems like a good. You seem like a good person to talk to about this. I know you have very strong feelings about plant-based diets, but I'd like to expand it out to just general nutrition, and as it pertains to COVID, I feel like we're missing an opportunity to talk about weight loss and talk about health and exercise and immune system supplements. So I don't know. Obviously, you'll have thoughts about that. I'm curious what your take is.
Yeah, well, I am a big believer that plant-based whole food diet is the best diet that you can be in on long terms. And I think it can boost your immunity and it can reduce your inflammation. It's a diet of exclusion more than anything else. I try to avoid as much as possible animal products, not just like meat and chicken, but also dairy. I think dairy is the most inflammatory food that you can put in your body. And I think you would be doing your body a disservice if you're eating that much animal product. Now, having said that, I'm not one of those vegan militants who come and kind of shame you to what you eat. I mean, I joke about it. I said, hey, I'm Arab and vegan, which makes me scary and annoying. But, but the thing is, I am not that annoying. It's like I even do a follow-up joke. I say, like, that's why I don't do CrossFit, because that's already too many red flags, Arab and vegan. So, but like, I don't go and shame people. Oh, what are you doing to the animals? Like, no. So like, I've been eating meat 40 years of my life. So I understand where the people are coming from. It's delicious. It's very hard to give up. But I think it's much better for your health. And I tell people, hey, if you're eating your burgers, your steaks, and your fried chicken, and you feel great, you're happy, you're healthy, good for you. Who am I to tell you to do anything more different? But if you have a problem, if you come to me, it's like, I don't feel that good, or I have a certain health issue. I tell people, why don't you try different things? That's why I chose the name Plant B. It's a play on Plan B.
Right.
Like you've tried everything else and you failed. Why don't you try a different plan? Try plants. So, and I have to say, like, a lot of people have tried it. And even when they did the 21 days challenge and they go back to eating meat, they say, you know what? I don't eat meat as much. I think more about what I eat. So it's a kind of, it's something that can help people with their diseases, I guess.
Brian has a question, and I also want to preload you with supplements, zinc, what have you. You know, should we be getting into that? But go ahead, Brian.
Can we back up? Yeah, I have a question that's fascinating. I want to back up a second because you mentioned inflammatory, and I've heard this from a number of people, and I always want to know, what does that mean? And more importantly, how does it manifest itself? Like, how would I know if something is inflammatory? Well, what effect would it have on me or that kind of stuff?
So in so many ways. So first of all, people who eat a lot of dairy, they have bloating, and they have a lot of constipation, and they have a lot of irritable bowel syndrome issue. All of these are signs of inflammation. When you have an irregular bowel movement, when you have irregular sleep, when you have long recovery period after you work out, you know, pain in your joints, pain in your muscles, when you don't recover as fast, these are all inflammation, right? So okay. I know that we throw the word inflammation around a lot, but it is true. So when you get sick a lot, because inflammation could manifest as something as a joint pain, a common cold, all the way to autoimmune disease. People with a lot of autoimmune disease, like, you know, I have a lot of people with young age that have Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, all of these bowel diseases, these are all inflammation. This is your elementary canal, your intestine screaming, saying like, there's something wrong with me. Food allergies, all of that. These are all signs of inflammation.
I'm wondering if culturally it has any effect too, because I'm Jewish, come from like, you know, Russian sort of peasant stock, and we are not known for our ability to tolerate lactose. So, you know, I avoid milk and dairy and stuff because I'm very lactose intolerant. I have friends who are Asian who are, you know, the same way because it wasn't part of their diet growing up, or, you know, in their heritage. And I'm wondering, are there cultures that you think can get away with it and some that can't, or this is overall?
You are not alone. 65% of the human population, not the Jewish population, not the Asian population, 65% of the human population have lactose intolerance. That is 7 out of 10 people in the world. So Right. If you think about it, if 7 out of 10 people have a problem with dairy, how is dairy a health food as promoted, you know? And that's why in the last couple of years, two of the biggest dairy companies in America and in Canada have announced bankruptcy, because people are starting to understand that dairy is not that milk mustache with Superman telling you you've got milk. That is all a marketing. So, and I understand, like, you know, a lot of people are getting like, you know, too diehard for keto diet or for paleo diet. And I tell those people, if you're coming from the land of junk food, absolutely, keto and paleo diet is much better. But on the long run, I think it actually can harm you on the long term, especially keto. And there's not a single person who went into keto diet and they're like, they gained the weight again, or they had problem with their, you know, with their bowel movements. And it is not healthy to be on a keto diet on that much fat in your diet for a very long term. So maybe in the short term, you want to lose weight, but you have to be careful because you're starving your body from carbs. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm curious. My son brought up last night when we were eating dinner, chicken, sorry. But he said, what about GMOs? I hear about GMOs. Are they bad? Well, and I was like, I'm sure they're bad, but I don't really know that much about the science of it.
Well, here's the thing. There's two ideas about GMOs. First of all, they say that all of our food is genetically modified. The bananas that we eat.
In some way, they were.
But the problem is, like, how much of genetic modification has been there? I mean, the bananas that we eat, I'm sure that you've read that. You know, the 16th century when they were drawing fruits, the bananas didn't look as, they were like more, they were more septic. The septas inside, and they didn't have this like meat of the banana.
No, and they were circular.
Yeah. It's different. So we have genetically modified our watermelons and our bananas. I don't think that all of GMOs are bad. I don't think that all of them are bad. I think that, but I think there are certain food that we should get as organic. And if you make an internet search, there is like the clean 15 and the dirty dozen. The dirty dozen, you have to eat them as organic. But the clean 15, you can eat them whether or not they're organic or not.
I don't want to go through all of them, but I'm curious what some of those items on the clean 15
are. Things with thick rinds.
Yeah, or, well, go ahead. Yeah, I have a list here.
Sorry?
Things with thick rinds, you're saying?
Yes.
What's included in the clean 15?
Yes, it's we can look it up right now.
Yeah, I have the Dirty Dozen, and it makes sense. You do hear about these.
Leafy.
Yeah, give you the Dirty Dozen. Strawberries, which you hear about a lot. Spinach, kale, nectarines, apples, grapes, peaches, and cherries are what come up for Dirty Dozen.
That's the GMO stuff?
Yeah, you want to eat that organically, right?
Yeah.
And
then there's the clean 15, where it doesn't really matter if you eat it more or not. But I think at the end of the day, listen, it's not a cult. When people say, "Oh my God, I ate chicken yesterday," it's like, it's fine. It's not a cult. Nobody's going to punish you. Nobody's going to put you in vegan prison. We are not. I mean, and that's, I think that's the problem with a lot of like the militant vegan movements, is that I think we have been indoctrinated for so long with how we eat. And this is the way we eat. And I think the way to cross over for people is to be kind of like more lenient and more understanding And sometimes even when I'm traveling, I cheat sometimes. I don't eat like 100% vegan. And it's not the end of the world. It's what you do 90% of your life.
Let's talk about the children's book, The Magical Reality of Nadia.
Yes.
I normally announce I hate people who write children's books, but then I realized Jimmy Kimmel wrote a children's book, and now Bossum has written a children's book. So, yeah.
And John Oliver wrote the children's book.
John Oliver wrote a children's book. So there's people I like who write children's books. now, did you illustrate the children's book?
Not me. There is there's an
Strike
Australian.
Two.
Yeah, it's not. No. But it has a funny story. I was speaking to Scholastic on the phone. I said, like, who's going to be the illustrator? And then Nadia, my daughter, was watching Netflix. And then on the screen, she was watching The Last Kids on Earth. And it's like, oh, my God, I love the animation. Who's the guy doing the animation? It's like, oh, he's an Australian guy. His name is Douglas Holgate. It's like, can we get them? They send him the draft. And he's like, I love the book. I'm going to illustrate it. So I have to thank Nadia for that.
And now I don't want to – far be it from me to give any advice on parenting because I'm a horrible dad. But – I feel like your daughter, who's already, we'll just call her precocious, is going to be even more emboldened now with this book with her name on it.
That's me.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. She's already a star. She's already a star. But the thing is, like, she's such a critic. She comes like, Dad, I read the book that, and it's not very accurate. I don't speak like that. It's like, Nadia, it's not an autobiography. This is a fictionalized character. This is not your autobiography. I just took the name and kind of imagined you in the future 3-4 years from now. It's like, I don't collect bobbleheads. It's like, yes, it's in the book. That is not you, Nadia. So she's starting to realize that there are two different Nadias. Yes.
It's an unauthorized autobiography.
An unauthorized autobiography.
So are you able to go? I mean, you were in Dubai doing some work. Are you able to go out and, oh, wait. Oh, yeah, you have some dates here coming up. Have you been doing much stand-up? Have you been doing dates?
Yes. I just finished New Jersey, the Stress Factory in New Jersey, and I'm going this weekend to Houston to improv where they're having the storm, and the week after I'm going to Baltimore and then Ohio. So I'm being
risk.
Yeah, well, I already got the vaccine, so.
Oh, did you get it in Dubai?
Yeah, I got it in Dubai. They gave it to me. So,
and you got two because you were there long enough where you could get the second shot.
Yes, yes, yes. So hopefully I'm going to be immune, and but I'm still wearing masks. So
where do you come down on supplements? Well, we're circling back to that.
Oh, okay. Supplements. I believe that you need B12 and a little bit of omega-3. And if you don't expose to sun, you need a little bit of vitamin D. That's like my go-to supplements.
Where are we on zinc?
There's a lot of food that are rich in zinc. I don't think that we need zinc that much.
Oh, okay. As long as
but
you're
I,
eating.
I, it was just like, yeah, as long as you're eating, like just eat the vegetables, eat the beans, and you'll have like all the zinc that you need.
Where are you now? What city do you reside in?
Los Angeles.
Oh. Nadia, is your daughter's 8 or 9?
She's going to be 9 next month. Yeah.
Has she been at home for a year like my kids have?
Yeah, yeah. Like distant learning and the whole shebang.
Are you good? I think you're yeah, obviously you're scholarly because you're a former surgeon. Do you get up and supervise? Do you?
No.
Good. Me neither.
No. But here's the thing about this children's book. I know that you said like they hate people who wrote children's book. The reason that I wrote the children's book is that I didn't really write it as a children's book. I actually wrote it as an adult book. And then Catherine Daly, which was like the amazing co-author, made it into a children's book. Mm. So I was thinking like, how can I have my experience? Someone who, because of his humor, was kind of penalized back in Egypt. And then I come here to America under the 4 years of lovely Trump. And me as an immigrant being here different, how can I translate that into a children's book? So I thought of one thing. which is you. We're all different, right? And this nation is basically built because of the differences that we have. Now, some people think that being different is bad, and some people, and I'm one of the people who think that being different is the source of the strength of this amazing nation. So I created the character, Nadia, being an Egyptian from Egyptian parents in an American school, and she is now being looked upon as being different. But now she falls into this magical pendant where you have an ancient Egyptian teacher who was locked in this pendant for 2,000 years, like, you know, like the genie
in the bottle. Yeah.
And then he comes out and he takes her into this magical dives into history. And through understanding her history, she understands how to deal with her differences here in America. So it is kind of like a more of a journey of this, of self-discovery and being proud of why you're different in this country. And you and people around her, whether they are white or brown or black, they understand that we all come from different places. So that's kind of like the theme of the book.
What you said that you were kind of penalized for your humor in your own country. Let's talk about that a little bit. How did that work?
Well, I had a show making fun of the government.
Right.
With the rise of the show, the Islamists came to power. So this was like the political satire show. It was the Jon Stewart version of the Middle East.
Right.
So under the Islamist, I was there was a warrant for my arrest. I was interrogated for 6 hours, and they were asking me to explain my jokes, which was terrible, because for 6 hours I had to explain to them joke by joke. And what's the worst about it is that when they're reading me back my jokes, they weren't that funny. So I went out and I kind
it's
of
the delivery.
Like, I fired half of my staff after that. So
that's got to be it's so brutal. Having to explain jokes is never good. It's never good when you're like sitting down and it's light outside and nobody's drunk. And
Adam, you mentioned the brutality of the air check yesterday. Yeah. How about this?
Yes.
Oh. I know. It was crazy. And they were like, for 6 hours, just like, what did you mean by this joke? And I said, like, I meant nothing. So like, why did the people laugh? I was like, why don't you go ask them? It was like crazy, right? So, yeah, and then, like, after the Islamists, they came the military, and then the military didn't like me that much because, you know, I'm an equal opportunity offender. I'll make fun of whoever in power. And I had my show canceled a couple of times, and then I had to flee. So I escaped from America, and I came here just in time as Donald Trump becoming president. So I said, like, screw my life.
I mean, out of the
like,
frying pan.
I am. I think I jinxed America. I brought in dictatorship with me.
I said when I was, I don't know why it makes me think you being sort of interrogated for your jokes. I got detained at McCarran Airport in Vegas a decade ago, and I got pulled out, sat in like this windowless room with a big wooden desk that had a big kind of hoop on it where they could chain you, they could like handcuff you to it or something. But anyway,
the guy
was an asshole. And he said to me, what do you do for a living? And I remember just thinking, well, I'm a comedian. But if I say to him I'm a comedian, he's going to go, oh, so you think it's funny to yell at a woman behind the counter at American Airlines? I think that's funny. Is this a joke?
Tell me a joke, funny man.
I knew that's all dumb guys have three or four responses. And if you tell them you're a comedian, you go, you think it's funny to break.
Everything's a joke.
Everything's a joke. Right. So I was flummoxed, right? So he goes, what do you do for a living? And I go, I was trying to think of what I did for a living. And I waited too long.
You had the drug dealer response.
Yeah, I waited too long. And he goes, you don't know what you do for a living? And then I just yelled, not a comedian. And
anything is not funny.
Well, thankfully, I was a carpenter. So I can use that like you could use surgeon. Because if they ever drill down and ask you anything specific, you could technically answer the questions.
Well, I was pulled down. I had a show outside in Cleveland once, and I was driving back after my show, and this was like a couple of years back, and it was so dark, and I couldn't see anything. So it seems that I kind of like, you know, went through like a stop sign. So I had like I have like a police officers, you know, like stopping me. And like in my mind, it's like, I'm going to get my phone. I'm going to, you know, film him. And like, I'm going to put it on internet. It's like, oh, you know, like a white officer, you know, pulling over a brown man. I was like going. And then he said like, and he was very nice. So I didn't have my my moment.
Have your foiled your plans.
Yeah, he was very nice. And he said like, well, you know, I let you go because like, you know, you were not around here. But he was extremely nice. And like, instead, I was like, would you like to see my green card? You see proof of residence that I am not an illegal alien. I was like, dude, this is my birth certificate. Like, I'm not trying to, like, please ask me anything.
I was told that there's a story from yesterday. Gary was telling me that Beverly Hills police officers are playing Beatles songs when people film them. So it doesn't.
Oh, they can't put it on the.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Genius.
Right.
That is copyright.
What am I going to do for your honor now, sir? Is love me do?
Yeah. Although I feel that if you pull over like a young black motorist, Hey Jude would agitate them and essentially elevate the situation.
Yeah. Leopard.
Can you? But like, how will this go? It's like, imagine all that people. It's like,
well,
stay down. Imagine all that people.
Yeah, they went with yesterday.
Oh, they did. Oh.
They play yesterday next to the body cam.
Oh, my God. I mean, can you imagine, like, police brutality on Beatles song?
Oh, my God.
Love,
so
love, me too.
It's got the word beat right in it.
Oh, my
right.
God.
All right, well, I want to know, terrible. We'll find more about that story, because I don't know if it's an app that the guy that the cops have. I don't know exactly how it works, but...
They just played off their phone.
This is a good Garagus question, because if you take a home video at a restaurant that happens to be playing music in the background, is that a cop? And you post it, is that a copyright infringement?
I'll tell you what. Let's take a break, because we have to take a break, and then we'll just come back with Bossum and we'll get into this, because it's an interesting story that we just kind of, pardon the pun, kind of backed into. So we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with news, and we'll do this at the top of the news.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Meet news with Gina. Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So, yeah, let's figure this story out, because I just got the cliff great. Notes from Gary.
So I'm looking at an Instagram account called Always Film the Police. So that's I guess, telling of where they're coming from. And I don't know, Chris or Caitlin, if you can pull it up, there is a cop. So somebody's filming him, and there's a cop standing there. And like Brian said, he holds his phone next to his body cam, and it's playing Beatles music as he talks to the people who are filming him. So that will end up being some sort of YouTube copyright.
Clever,
I mean,
I guess, but
yeah,
I don't know. I just attended a webinar, a 3-hour webinar on fair use. And this seems like it would fall. If someone else is playing it, like publicly, it would feel like that's not on you.
I'm just putting, are we going to have the clip? If not, I can play it into the phone.
I don't know. I think it's not that it's a fair use, argument. I think there's a filter that may pull it off of whatever it's on.
So really what they're using it for is because people live stream these on Instagram Live. You can live stream to all your followers of what's going on. And when you do it on Instagram, they have a, like an automatic filter or automated. So if they hear anything that's copyrighted without even looking, they just take it off.
Well,
can we use the same argument, you know, when people say like, hey, I need my privacy. It's like, hey, if you don't have anything to be worried about, why are you worried about your privacy? So we should say like, hey, if you're worried about like you're doing something illegal with your citizen, why are you streaming those songs? It is the same kind of argument, right? It's like, oh, what are you worried about, Mr. Officer?
I agree. If I was a cop, my my problem with being live streamed would be mostly the bad angle. You know, the person sitting in the car, you come low up, angle. You got the double chin.
You're all jowl.
You're all jowl. That's a super unflattering angle to be filmed from. My argument would be...
waist height, you got a gut.
Yeah, mine would be more an aesthetic argument than an actual content issue. So the cops... Yes, and I would argue that, yes, it does feel like, to use what they have, a sort of admission of guilt that you're playing that you're loaded up with the best of the Beatles when you walk up to the car. But it's
can you imagine the future of this now if you have, you know, people in Guantanamo, people in, you know, all of these like interrogation sites, the dark sites, and then suddenly they play the kind of famous songs and they can do whatever they want with prisoners. Damn, that will revolutionize the game of torturing people everywhere. That is terrible.
Well, it's funny. We've used music to torture in so many ways, between, you know, Waco and you know, the heavy metal music to drive people out in parks. They've tried
in Guantanamo.
In parks here, they try to rouse homeless people with Baby Shark and with all these horrible songs. So we have a rich history of using music as a sort of weapon.
Baby Shark. Oh, my gosh. Like,
that'll do it.
Baby Shark. Boom, boom. Oh, my God.
Song's a banger.
And they will, like, beat people on that beat. That is terrible. Yeah. That is terrible.
All right. I'm sorry, Gina. So your news, not mine.
So, well, we have another death as of Wednesday morning. Conservative radio personality Rush Limbaugh has died 1 year after announcing his lung cancer diagnosis, who is 70. Limbaugh had been hosting the Rush Limbaugh Show in syndication for more than 30 years. He was a Republican Party icon, a close ally of former President Donald Trump. He was awarded the Medal of Freedom during the State of the Union address last year. He was diagnosed with lung cancer in January. He shared his cancer diagnosis in February, and in October, he announced that the cancer is terminal.
How crazy is it that he was on Monday Night Football for a year? No. Wasn't he on? Didn't he join the Monday Night Football?
Yeah.
He was.
I have no recollection of that.
The only thing weirder than Dennis Miller doing it for a season was Rush Limbaugh going into the booth of Monday Night Football. I mean, that just sounds insane, right? 2003.
Was chastising one of the black quarterback.
Yes.
Saying that like
Donovan McNabb.
He was in the halftime show, right? Like he was like the studio crew, right?
He's saying that he's getting too much credit just because he's black. Oh my God. Can you imagine that?
That didn't fly in 03. It certainly wouldn't work today. He was, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Maybe he
wasn't in the booth.
He wasn't in the booth.
Right.
He was at the desk or whatever it is. It still seems like a wild piece of stunt casting. And Dennis Miller was in the booth. I would say about Rush Limbaugh's death, I would say there's probably not a character who half the country is glad he's gone and the other half mourns his loss more than Rush Limbaugh. You know, when Betty White dies, we'll all just kind of be, she's not, she'll be 97, you know, right. People will go like, yeah, it had a good run. You know, I mean, we're not going to split the room with Betty White. You're not going to go a cocktail party the day after Betty White dies and half the cocktail party's elated and the other half is
cheersing,
crestfallen.
Right.
I don't think we're going to have that with Betty.
I mean he had a segment called AIDS Update where he was like making fun of, you know, people dying out of AIDS. So I don't think that, you know, he would be missed by so many people on that side. And the whole thing about like, oh, it's too soon, he died. I mean, I kind of like hold back from people that, but like, I understand if people would kind of celebrate that, because I mean, he was a mean person and he was a terrible person for so many people. And I don't know, like, the fact that he's dead. I mean, I personally wouldn't go after him, but like, I would understand if people go after him.
I think he just did.
You can be mean. That can be your brand. You can be Don Rickles. But like Bassem said, like he was particularly cruel towards people who were sick and dying and dead. And mm-hmm. now that there's, you know, there's a lot of like, oh, give the man his peace. He just died of cancer. It's like, well, there's a little reap what you sow going on.
Yeah, I really, yeah. I got to say, I never really listened to Rush Limbaugh at all. I really had nothing. I just whatever I would hear in the news is all right. is all Same. I heard of him.
Except About
for
him. Yeah.
Except for Monday Night Football, of course.
And, so for me, when I first saw Rush Limbaugh in the beginning of 2000, and at that time I didn't know much about American politics. I mean, I have to say that like I was listening to him, and even me not knowing what's going. I mean, I was drawn by the production. I was drawn with the personality. Someone who's from Egypt who doesn't know anything about American politics, I was drawn to the aesthetics of it all. About like him is going. He's a big persona, and it wasn't until I understood some of the politics of America. It's like, oh my God, that guy is a terrible person. It took me some time to understand, but for someone who's not educated, you would be drawn by the show.
He's
very eloquent. He's a showman. He can go on and on and on and on.
He was successful for a reason.
He was successful. He can draw people. He can make people listen to him.
To be fair to him, McNabb did gas out in the Super Bowl. I mean, he was not a good.
He had his flaws, yeah.
The fourth quarter was not a good quarter for McNabb.
A prime time player. So.
All right, he'll be missed. What else we got, Gina Gray?
Well, the Jackass family is moving ahead without Bam Margera. The 41-year-old skateboarder and daredevil has been told by producers of the upcoming Jackass 4 movie that he is being dropped from the production due to his problems with addiction and unwillingness to properly address them as per his contract. So according to TMZ, producers allowed Bam to be part of the movie on a number of conditions, including drug tests, regular visits to a psychologist, but he ultimately failed to meet the requirements. So it's going to be a Bamless Jackass.
I feel like I don't know. First off, he's not a commercial airline pilot.
No,
you know what I mean? Like maybe the bar's too high. He's a guy who's lighting his scrotum sack on fire and then dunking it in baking powder or something. Like I feel like first off, most of the stuff they do on Jackass, you should be drunk or high.
Yes,
to attempt.
That's right. Yeah,
if you have drug tests, that basically nullifies the whole reason of having him on the show. That kind of like it's an oxymoron.
This is like, okay, yeah,
we're gonna have you do like stupid stuff, but we will need you to have a drug test. Is that?
Yeah, this is like the producers of Bum Fights are now going to be testing for drugs and alcohol, like
breathalyzers
for Boone's Farm.
This is kind of goes with it now. Maybe they're doing it because they just feel like he's that out of, I mean, he must be that out of control.
Yeah. And Steve-O, when he was on this show, said, you know, there's a palpable difference doing these stunts sober as opposed to doing them loaded. And way scarier.
You remember his good friend, like I think it was really close friends with Ryan Dunn, who died drunk driving. I think he killed someone in the car, if I'm not mistaken. But like, I think that was a wake up call for a lot of those guys. Steve-O got sober eventually. And I wonder if, you know, Bam wasn't on board with the, wagon train.
Yeah.
It's like Jackass 2.0. Let's do the same crazy shit, but sober.
You also wonder how many options there are for a drunken Bam Margera. You know what I mean? It's not, corporate America is not going to welcome him with open arms. He's not going to get a gig. You know, no headhunters coming for him, wanting him to
day trade.
I mean, there's not a lot of options for that guy. He's getting a little old for the skateboarding.
Add in the fact that his success kind of begat, the YouTubers and a lot of social media. You know, they were the vanguard of that.
Yeah. Well, I get uncomfortable watching that stuff. I feel uncomfortable. So, and it's weird because I'll watch the UFC all day long and be perfectly comfortable. But there's certain things I just feel uncomfortable about.
Dawson, do you remember driving back? I'm almost positive it was a live show in San Diego. We drove back the same night, back in the radio days, and we were in a limo provided by the radio station, and we had Jackass on the TV, and we were all enjoying it, except for Adam, who had a hat over his face. He's like, my teeth, I can't, my teeth hurt. Because there was some horrible, you know, trauma to someone's testicles or something.
Yeah, just having like a snake bite a guy's scrotum sack. As a physician, Bassem, would you recommend?
I want to echo you what you said, your sentiment earlier. He will not be missed.
As a physician. Yeah. It just, I don't know. Maybe I'm, I've never been accused of having a lot of empathy, but watching people being injured or tortured or harmed, even if it's self-inflicted, even if it's a joke, I don't know. It hurts my teeth.
I know. And it ends up being in the ER, taking the bed of someone else who needs that bed just because you wanted to do a stunt and film it on YouTube and tell, like, and it's like, hey, look at me, you know, exposing my scrotum being on fire. And then you're going to end up like being in our care and taking the bed of someone else who needs that bed.
I never thought about that, but it's like, what happened to your son? Well, he's 10, he has severe asthma, and we rushed him to the emergency ward, but there was this guy who put rebar up his ass and filmed it, and he just passed away in the waiting room. They didn't have an open bed.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we need that bed now for something.
That's a good point.
That's trivial.
So maybe all these YouTube and TikTok guys, whatever, need to carry a card that say, I waive my right to medical attention,
exactly.
Or at least I will go to the back of the line.
Well, I would say this. If you are in the emergency room because you ate too many Tide detergent pods and my daughter's having a seizure because she has epilepsy, she gets to jump the line.
Sure.
Your self-inflicted shit is fine. I'm not saying we won't get to you, but you get
eventually
your stomach pumped after my daughter gets stabilized.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the way it could work. Yeah.
Fair.
So there is an influx of...
Hold on, doctor.
Yes. What? Yes, sir.
When I was a kid, I heard about people getting their stomach pumped 1,000 times. Like, he had to have his stomach pumped.
Yes.
What is that? Is there such a thing?
Well, it's basically you put like a tube like up your nose and it goes down to your stomach. And, you know, it depends on what you're getting. But, like, you know, we get you like a cocktail of stuff, saline. It kind of like you pump your stomach and basically this will make you even vomit what you got, especially like if that earlier, or kind of like help you with movement of, you know, your bowel movement. But basically it's kind of like making you kind of.
So we're basically inducing this, but we're not really pumping out your stomach.
Like a bilge
like
pump.
Like a sump pump. Yeah.
Right.
It is some pump. There's some pump involved because you inflate and then kind of like, you know.
But you're saying
it gets out from that tube too.
You're saying Rod Stewart threw up all that semen. He didn't actually get it sucked out of his stomach. Because again, I heard it was pumped, but I was picturing it being drained. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I don't know which nurse will suck that.
Just answer the question, doctor.
It was pumped, not sucked.
All right, what else we got,
Dina? Oh boy. Well, the Kardashian-Jenner clan is expanding into the liquor business. Kendall Jenner announced her own tequila called 818, because you know she's from Calabasas and we're Valley people here. The model says she's been working on it for a long time. On Instagram, she writes, "For almost 4 years, I've been on a journey to create the best tasting tequila, and I think we've done it."
A journey.
But this is interesting.
By the way, They've successfully poisoned the minds of a generation of young women. Why not work on the liver? I feel like go downstairs, Kardashian. The mind has already been turned to mush.
What's
because
the next
of your
organ?
Long running show. Now we got to go for the major, the second organ. Yeah,
I blame Ryan Seacrest.
Yes,
for all of it. So how does Kendall go down and, you know, pick agave plants and, you know, mash? No, she does not. Here's what I found in UpRock. So they report that the tequila comes from La Cofradia Distillery in Jalisco. That's according to Tequila Matchmaker. That's a site that compiles where all the tequilas actually come from. The distiller and warehouses make and age dozens and dozens of branded tequilas. It's pretty normal. It's a normal practice in tequila to do contract distilling and aging and then have a blender or simply a distributor just come in with labels and marketing. It's called white labeling, and celebrities do it with weed too. So was she down in Jalisco? Probably not.
But that goes a little bit against what we know about her. I mean, I would think that the tequila comes from the sweat glands of her current NBA boyfriend. because she kind of like, she goes through them. I mean, I think she went through like both conferences. I think she's like both like the West and the East conferences. I mean, she's all-star Jen.
So they just Kylie. They just collect the washcloths and rags and
ring
them.
Rags. Yeah. I think of, like,
press them.
The only one she skipped was Jeremy Lin.
Well, he's in the G League right now.
Oh, okay.
I think once you get promoted again to the NBA, I think she got a shot of tequila.
Is this so? This is Kim. Sorry, this
Kendall.
Oh, Kendall,
the model.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Isn't celebrity tequila kind of passé by now? Like, aren't we 10 years past that wave?
All you have to do is hear about what. Clooney made, or what?
Casamigos.
And then there's
right behind me.
there's also God, what's his name? Not Ryan Seacrest.
Ryan Reynolds
with his gin.
The gin,
you know, and it's like,
and he sold it for a fortune,
right? And how
we
much
got a
money?
Dan Dunn segment coming up on celebrity liquors.
That's right, we're having it delivered. And by the way, what I don't know about tequila could fill Fort Knox, but I did watch a little bit of an Instagram story of Kendall doing a taste test, and I don't know. I'm far from a professional, but I feel like she needs to weigh in a little more than this. She tastes one. She's like, they're strong, and then tastes another. This one is more strong.
Yeah.
So this one. And that,
Fine palate.
That's your contribution. Okay.
That's a very, very intellectual test.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Like Adam, strong, this is good news for you, though, strong. Because with the name, you got your A18 rye coming out.
Yeah.
So this could be a little bit of a ride that wave.
We could bundle it.
Sue their ass.
Yeah.
Who's that voice?
That's the great
Dawson.
Mike Dawson. Don't you feel like, I don't know, I don't want to be a douche, but. Does there need to be some tragedy in the life of the Kardashians? Like, no one's been
other than their dad dying.
Well, that's been a while. It's been a
they're
while.
They're over it.
It's been a while. I mean, they got a lot of kids going in a lot of different directions. You didn't hear about a car crash or a helicopter crash or any weird stuff. I'm not willing it. I'm just saying.
Well, there's a little mental illness.
Yeah, Bruce killed a guy.
Oh, that's it's right. True. Caitlin killed.
Caitlin actually definitely killed.
No,
that's right.
I think Bruce did.
A guy wouldn't have driven poorly, you know.
I gotta check the date.
That's
the
ladies.
I gotta check the date.
But like, I mean, isn't Kim divorcing Kanye?
She is. He's having a lot of struggles with mental illness.
I don't know if that's a tragedy or a blessing.
But they're both gonna walk with $1 billion. Like, I don't.
But these people will walk with $1 billion anyway.
Yeah,
I think the classes has already said we are already in a caste system and we're on the lower caste and they're high. They will always make money.
Yeah.
And we're going to watch from afar feeling bad about ourselves.
I think it was Caitlin got into the crash.
No,
Bruce.
I'm looking at it here. May 1st, my birthday, 2015. It says,
oh, come on.
It says former Olympic decathlon champion and reality star Bruce Jenner was involved in a fatal four-car accident on Saturday.
Wow. Well, you are right, Gina Graham.
You are terrible people. You're terrible.
I'm just giving the news.
Come on, Gina.
Not
funny.
Adam is internally. Okay, here we got the crash.
Boss, my apologies on Gina's behalf.
Yeah, I really am. I need to be canceled immediately. I'm problematic. Let's move on to something that architecturally is interesting. These pop up on a lot of Airbnbs, so I can attest to at least seeing many of them. But Merriam Anderson Architects has designed some of Dallas's largest historic buildings, restoration, and now they have a new project. It's an apartment complex made completely out of shipping containers. Yeah. And we have a picture for you. This is in Southeast Dallas. They look kind of cool. So let me give you a little bit of the nuts and bolts about how this works. Construction set to start early this year, so soon. One bedroom affordable housing units. There'll be 19 of them made out of repurposed 300 square foot shipping containers. The compact rental units have a living area located in front of a kitchen, a bathroom, and a single bedroom. And we're looking at a sliced up side view here. The apartment units will be rented starting at about $900 a month. It'll include utilities. They're restricted to residents earning 60% or less of the area median income. They plan to use the project as a prototype for larger affordable housing communities with 100 to 130 units to be built all over Dallas. So this is the prototype.
My sister has a shipping container house.
Really?
Yeah.
These are very popular on Airbnb. Like, they're very cool.
Yeah, but let's talk about insulation.
No,
how hot
I hopped up as retrofitted.
No, seriously. I mean, because you're talking about Texas, and in the summer, this could be brutal. Like, how
they have to have a ventilation.
How about now?
The insulation, the ventilation, whatever. Like, I mean, these are like tin boxes at the end of the day. These are like metal boxes.
Yeah. So, but also,
happens with insulation.
A lot of them come with Chinese women stowing away, and I hear you have to live with them as well. I don't know all the codes.
The loophole in the law.
Hey, Bossum, remember when you thought I was the bad guy?
They're grandfathered in. Squatter's rights. No, here's the thing about the shipping container. It's kind of weird. I get it in like certain applications, but it is a big steel box and it's heavy. And so it's like, I'm going to build a house with shipping containers. Like, it sounds cool and modular and very on the vanguard. But if you think about it, it's like, well, what do? Well, you get the shipping container and then you have to get an acetylene cutting rig and like literally cut out, you know, panels of it to put windows or skylights, like the end of the original Poseidon Adventure when they're cutting through the hull of the ship. Right. And then you have to get a bunch of rigid insulation. And then, of course, you have to bring it in on a flatbed. And at the end of the day, I don't know if it's a time saver or money saver. Like, the thing's heavy as shit. You got to work with metal. I mean, you got to work with thick gauge metal. Like, you can't just take a handsaw and whack out a sliding glass door. You're going to have to get some serious cutting instrument in there. And you have to, again, it's like you have to build the foundation. It's not like you just set it on the ground. You still have to do like a formal foundation, raised foundation, and put it on the foundation. It ends up being a conversation piece, but I don't know if it's a real practical. And yes, the side of that thing during the summer would be hot. You would burn your hand like the hood of a car parked in a Costco in the middle of Canoga Park in July if you touch that thing. So it's got to be tons of like rigid insulation that you put on it. And it just feels like more work than actual practical.
I think it's a stunt, and it's been used in commercial use a long time ago. If you go to Dubai, they have like a whole kind of mall made out of containers.
Really?
Yeah. It's called the Walk, and they're all like next to the Walk. They all like use that. And I think the amount of money that went into repurpose them is actually a lot of money. I think it was just like the aesthetics.
Right.
I didn't think that they save any money.
Dubai, it's a novelty.
Dubai doesn't need to save any money.
Right.
So it is. I think it's just like as Adam said, it's a conversation piece.
I could see though if you're doing single 330 foot square foot units and you want to just stack them all next to each other and each one is a separate unit and wouldn't take that much modification. That's one thing. But if you're trying to do a 3,000 square foot house by piling nine of these things together, it's just a fucking shit show.
And remember, they said this one's 19 units and they want ones that are 100 to 130 units. So this is just like, what, a giant rectangle in the sky.
And also, you You don't need a house that can withstand a meteor hit, like a direct hit. It could just be a nearby hit and you'd be fine, you know?
And but do you think they could do it cheaper than in L.A. when it's $800,000 per unit building housing for the homeless?
Well, no. And I'll tell you why L.A. wouldn't work that way, because they would have to do an environmental impact report on because the thing was painted in the 70s and there may be some traces of lead in the paint. So we're going to have to sign off on that. It's all regulation. It's not right. The actual cost of the 2x4 or even the guys who put the 2x4s together. It's all we have to do, all the impact things, the hoops and stuff, all the stuff you have to jump through in California. That's the thing that makes everything cost prohibitive. It's not right. The actual cost of construction. Right. And so all that same shit would probably apply to this as well.
That makes, yeah. Well,
I'm just confident we would fuck it up. That's basically what I'm saying.
However, you're talking about regulation. They say that I just read that the whole thing about what's happening in Houston right now with all of the winter storm and why they're have a power crisis is that their power companies chose not to regulate. The power grid in Texas is different because it's totally unregulated. They don't really follow the federal code, and they have the option to either winterize or not winterize their thing. So they because they don't have regulation, so they didn't winterize their power supply, and that's why the whole grid just went into flames.
Right, but we have tons of regulation in California, and our power grid blows ass too. So
yeah, when we have a fire, that is true.
Yeah. All right. My argument isn't no regulation. It's just do it sensibly so they can make stuff in a semi-cost, responsible but cost-effective way. Don't over-regulate.
I agree.
All right. What do we got, Gina?
Well, speaking of snow and craziness, people are desperate. In fact, in Kansas, my mom told me they had a power outage for a couple hours yesterday. And I wasn't super thrilled to think about my mom, who's of a certain age, sitting in the house freezing her ass off, or anyone for that matter. But maybe we got to be more like this guy in the Ukrainian. So he staged a bogus murder because he didn't feel like the shoveling of the snow from around his family's house was adequate after his blizzard. So they didn't release his name. He called an emergency number after a big storm and told the dispatcher that he wanted to confess to killing his mother's boyfriend. He said he was willing to surrender, but cops would have to shovel out an impassable road in order to reach him.
What?
Officers hopped in their all-terrain vehicle, headed to the address in question, but found no sign of anyone being murdered. The caller admitted he faked the whole scene in order to get someone to clear the area around his home. He was charged with filing a false report and fined $5.
Small price to pay.
Yeah, literally.
Wow.
And Ukraine, snowstorm. This feels like some day drinking was going on.
Yeah.
Come on.
This was concocted.
How do you know?
This is definitely some drunk dialing. I mean, imagine the COVID has been a good enough reason to do the day drinking. This socked in. Going nowhere.
You have no choice.
You really must drink. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Gina
Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
The book, it is called The Magical Reality of Nadia. It's available now on Amazon. Live dates, you're coming up at Magoobies Joke House. That's February 25th through the 27th. Where is that?
That is in Maryland.
Oh, in Maryland.
That is Maryland, yeah.
I'm trying to think of the name of this town.
I can't. Yeah, it's Timonium.
It's a crazy name.
Yes.
And also coming up in Ohio at the Funny Stop, March 11th and 13th. And shoot Bossum a tweet at B. Yusef. That is Y-O-U-S-S-E-F. Bossum, thank you as per usual.
Thank you so much for having me.
Always a delight. And until next time, Stan McCroll for Gina Grandwald, Brian and Bossum Yusef saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You also find him on Facebook at Adam Carolla. Hit the thumbs up button. And on YouTube at Adam Carolla. And at Instagram at Adam Carolla, because that's his name. So kind of Adam Carolla. Want to leave us a message? 888-634-1744. And pick up all of Adam's great stuff. All at the website. It's his name. AdamCarolla.com.